Natasha Leggero is a longtime stand-up comedian, host of the Endless Honeymoon podcast, along with her husband, Moshe Kasher, author of The World Deserves My Children, which came out a couple years ago. And as far as the stand-up is concerned, she's here in Austin this weekend performing at Cap City Comedy Club. Two shows tonight, two shows tomorrow. That's Friday, January 19th and the 20th. Go to capcitycomedy.com to snag those tickets. Natasha, thank you so much for the time. How are you doing today?
I'm great.
I would ask if you've performed in Austin before, but I know you've performed in Austin before. You actually performed the first of three nights worth of shows at the New Cap City last night in the Domain. And what a beautiful location that is, Natasha. The acoustics of the room are really cool. They've got a little balcony area, a little upstairs area to go along with the standard comedy club seating downstairs as well. How did night one go for you here in town?
It was so fun. I loved it. And it's funny because the last time I was here in Austin, I was scheduled to do Moon Tower. I did one show. It was amazing. I had a kind of a bad cough. Then, of course, I tested for COVID. I had COVID. I gave Nikki Glaser COVID because she was in the green room. Then I had to cancel the rest of my shows and I was so bummed. And so now I'm back in Austin. I checked into the hotel and they gave me the exact same room that I had COVID in. So I'm kind of reliving my COVID nightmare.
Hopefully not a sign of things to come. Now, COVID treated different people different ways. I lucked out. I felt like crap for 36 hours, but was fine after that. Did COVID wreck you, or were you amongst that lucky group of people who got over it pretty quickly?
No, I got over quickly, but it was at that stage where, you know, everyone was still very afraid and you weren't allowed to fly, or you weren't, I'm sure people in Texas still, but you weren't supposed to fly if you had it. So then I had to stay in Austin, even though I had to cancel my shows for, I think, like 7 days or something. But yes, that's all past me. And it's so great to be back. And the audience is coming out, and I felt so bad that I had to cancel my shows last time I was here. So, yeah.
Well, glad that you are not coughing and that you're not having to cancel any shows as of yet. And I don't know if you're going to be sticking around in town for an extended period, because I know your husband, Moshe, he's doing a book stop. Actually, he's doing a book tour event with Duncan Trussell on the date that his new book comes out, which is really cool. Congrats to him on that. Just how instrumental were you in the book writing process for him, considering that you had a very successful book came out within the last couple of years?
I actually wrote most of Moshe's book. No, I'm just kidding. No, Moshe is an amazing writer, and that's so exciting that my ex-boyfriend, Duncan, is going to be interviewing my current husband, Moshe, about his book. So I'm excited for that. I'm a huge fan of Duncan's as well as Moshe's. I think Duncan's podcast is like the only podcast I religiously listen to. And yeah, but I didn't know that Moshe was doing that. He doesn't tell me his schedule.
Is that right? We just have these two things that are that close to one another in Austin. Okay, well, that's how it
Wait,
goes.
Is it next week?
It is the following Tuesday. So I didn't know if you guys were in town together and you were going to do Kill Tony or something on a Monday. And then
have separate lives.
Okay, well, that's fair.
And then someone has to watch the kid.
Yeah.
You know, she goes to school. That's what sucks too, because, you know, when she was a baby and not quite in school and a toddler, we could like take her on the road and let her sleep in the bathrooms and, you know, we would just kind of just have her around in the green room. And now she can like understand what we're saying on stage. So we don't necessarily want her backstage. And she's at school and it's public school. So public school, like you really, every time you take them out of school, you get like 5 phone calls. And, you know, it's like you need to have an excuse and it goes on their permanent record. So it's not ideal to be taking them out of school either. So, you know, someone's got to watch her.
Yeah, it's interesting times to be raising kids. You have an almost 6-year-old, I believe. I've got a 9 and 7-year-old at home. They are thankfully in school right now. But we're in very weird times, considering what we all went through with COVID a few years ago and just everybody emerging from that and hopefully not too broken in the process. What do you see as the biggest challenge with being a parent in 2024, Natasha?
I mean, there's a lot. Honestly, it's, I guess, the phones, because I try really hard to not model that I'm, you know, attached to this phone. Like, there's just this like thing at the end of my hand that is more interesting and compelling than my child. And, you know, just really trying to have some discipline around that. And then also, like, I had to get off of Instagram because I felt like every time I got on Instagram, there was like a millennial parent influencer telling me how to parent and what to say. And, you know, every time I would log on, it's like, don't say, be careful to your kid. Don't say good job to your kid. Tell me, works really hard. If you do this, you're going to be fucking them up. And it's like every single time I would go on there, there would be someone telling me what to do and say to my kid. And I was just feeling so inadequate. And I mean, these people don't know what they're fucking doing either. No. And everything that people are suggesting, all these doctor mom influencers, it all goes against my instincts, and nothing I was doing was good enough or right. So I think just like, for me, the biggest challenge is trying to just listen to my own instincts. And I know I'm a good enough parent, and, you know, not get so swayed by everyone around you telling you what to do. But it's also hard too, like, what to say to your kid. Like, my daughter, my friend drove her somewhere who has a kid the same age. And my friend told me, like, full disclosure, your child did ask me if I have hair on my vagina. And I'm like, I was so embarrassed, but, you know, it's like, usually she's five, you know, usually you're four when you ask something like that. I don't know what I don't know what her issue is with, she's kind of obsessed, you know, like she really wants to know, and I don't want to like scold her for that. So I'm not exactly sure how to handle it, but, you know, it's just like all those little things that come up, how to talk to them, what to say. Like, we were in the grocery store aisle the other day, and she like wanted to get Fruit Loops. And I was like, no, you can't get Fruit Loops, you know? And she's like, why? And they make, you know, of course they make all the sugar cereals on the lowest rack, so the kids can like look at them and try to put them in the basket. And then she kept crying about it. And then finally I go, because General Mills causes cancer. And then she goes, but mom, why would they sell it if it causes cancer? And I'm like, well, that's one of the big issues that we're trying to think about in life. I don't know. And then it's like, why am I telling this to a five-year-old? Like, I'm probably scarring her in some way. So, you know, it's just like, and especially being a comedian, just like, what do you say to them that's not going to have some long-lasting trauma effect?
You just touched on the two things that I think are the biggest battles. It's the screen time thing and making sure that they're able to be present and actually have human to human interactions with other people. And then also the food thing. You go anywhere, every kid's menu is like chicken fingers, quesadilla, pepperoni pizza or cheese pizza, just complete crap. And so I want to teach them.
How about your kid has like a third of your salmon? It's just, I don't really do kids menus because of that. And I've tried to make my kids' palate as developed as possible, much to my detriment. Like, now she wants caviar.
Oh, wow.
We'll be in public, but she's still a toddler. She'll be like crying. And she's like, caviar, caviar, mommy. Like, can you please keep your voice down? We're at a Black Lives Matter rally. It's humiliating. It's a challenge, but, you know, we didn't come into this world to not have challenges and for everything to be really easy. And I think if what's behind it is love and you're able to, like, you know, fight some of the habitual screen time stuff, you know, because it's like, I don't need to keep like refreshing my screen while my daughter is like doing her 7 minutes of breakfast in the morning. It's like, it's not that long.
No, it's not. And they also pick up on what it is that you're doing too, to where even if you are saying something, actions speak louder than words, as the old cliche goes. So you are setting that example for them. And that's an uphill battle for all of us at times, unfortunately, is not staring at this little box that has been created and designed, or the apps have been designed to hook us as much as humanly possible. So you want to build that foundation. It's also hard, back to your point on challenging ourselves and this being a difficult world, finding ways to properly challenge them, because every generation conceivably has it easier than the previous generation. Finding ways to put them through certain difficulties to where they do have to learn lessons and grow and fail and all those good things as well.
Yeah. And I mean, hopefully our kids' generation, I don't know what we're calling them, the last generation. Hopefully those kids will think our phone addictions are whack and they feel sorry for us. And we'll be telling them stories about how, you know, we used to use our phones to order food at a place that was right down the street. And they would just deliver it to us instead of us going there. And, you know, I'm hoping, I mean, because my generation, like Generation X, I guess you would call it, like our whole thing was like, you know, how do you get all the information, all the different sides, and then what do I think about that side, you know? And that's what was like cool, and you know, just to like be informed and then come up with your own opinion. And now it's like everyone just wants to, no one reads anything but the headline. And then they just want to like identify with a side and they don't even want to hear your side of it. And it's just bizarre. So I, you know, hopefully the new generation, you know, I don't know, what are they called? Like people who never afford houses, whatever the youngest generation, I think they'll react to whatever's happening with the current generation. So it'll be interesting, but they're definitely not going to be the same.
Yeah, millennials and Gen Z have gotten into a bad habit of letting themselves be defined by their emotions versus recognizing their emotions, which is obviously a healthy thing, and responding in kind to where you are being defined by your reaction to adversity, right? I think Gen Alpha is what our kids' generation is considered now, will trend back towards the generation that you and I come from, where we do try to take all sides in and actually really give thought into how we feel about something versus just being duped into a belief or ideology based on headlines that we're reading on the internet, Twitter, you know, Instagram, elsewhere.
Yeah. And how can people not be duped? It's like, you know, 30-second TikToks that show, you know, certain numbers and certain facts, quote facts and headlines, but it's like, you obviously can't understand nuance, which a lot of the really big issues contain just from headlines and 30-second clips. Like you have to read books, you have to hear all sides, you have to weigh and consider.
So Natasha, I've really enjoyed your podcast, The Endless Honeymoon, that you do with your husband, Moshe. I have to come to your defense, though, based on a recent episode. I know that the letter of the law says that humans are animals, but the question that was asked on New Year's Eve about favorite animals, the supposed happiness expert, what a miserable person that person was to say humans are their favorite animals. You were right there. Even if technically humans are animals, it's ridiculous to say humans are your favorite animals. No kid in their right mind, and we have to look at kids for the for this state of ideal happiness, is going to say their favorite animal is a human when you ask your 5-year-old or my 7 and 9-year-old what their favorite animal is.
Okay, that's a very good point. So just to give people a little bit of setup, on New Year's Eve, I was seated at a dinner party next to a woman who said she was a foremost happiness expert. And then when we asked her what's the happiest animal, she said, humans in dementia. And I told Moshe, well, that's a bad answer. That's not an animal. And he roasted me saying humans are animals. And, you know, thank you for that. I mean, I get that they're on a technicality they are, but you as a, you know, expert answering the question, it does kind of seem like you're getting out of the question. Yep. By saying humans in dementia are the happiest animals. So
what is the happiest animal?
I don't know. I'm not a happiness expert. I'm assuming it's my dog because, you know, I just like pet it all day and give it treats, something like that. Although, yeah, I don't know. I mean,
I think it has to be dogs. I mean, dogs essentially have us humans as their indentured servants. I don't know what you call us, but we're at their beck and call. We feed them. We clean up after them. We let them sleep around the house all day. Of course, I guess if you're the dog of a homeless person, your life is a little bit different. But as far as domesticated creatures go, it's dogs bar none. Cats are way too conscious. Cats are way too intuitive with things to think that they're happy. I mean, cats, you don't see cats with homeless people for a reason. Cats will see a homeless guy and they'll be like, there's no way that you're going to take better care of me than I can. Dogs are, much to people's chagrin, loyal to the next hand that feeds it. But if you do feed that creature, it's completely satisfied.
Well, it makes me really happy that you said that, because I was so embarrassed by that. And Moshe was like, I was going to put up a clip, and he's like, you are going to get roasted so hard for saying that humans aren't animals. So I don't think you should put that up.
Well, of course, without context, it's going to sound bad. But when you take the entire context of the conversation, then it becomes a little bit of a different story.
Honey, we don't do context anymore. No one cares.
Yeah. Back to the original point, I guess, right? So Moshe's book, it's a fascinating concept where it's him taking six different ideas that have really shaped who he is as a person. And it really got me thinking about some of the things that shaped me as a person, too. Is there a most important element or aspect of the life that you've lived that shaped who you are right now, Natasha?
For me, like when I grew up in Illinois, and basically, you know, I'd work in a grocery store, and I just remember staring at the clock, like, when is my life going to start? Like in high school, like I just hated it there. And then when I finally, you know, I went to college, I got like a small scholarship at like an Illinois State University, which was even worse than Rockford, because it was like all corn for like 3 hours. You just drive from Rockford through corn for 8 hours. And then I remember really wanted to go to New York. And my mom was like, don't do it. Don't do it. It's so scary. Like, it'll be so bad. Please don't do it. And I was really scared. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to do it anyway. And it was like the beginning of my life. And I guess it's not like my lesson isn't don't listen to your mom, but it's more listen to yourself, you know? And once you start seeing the benefits, like, of listening to yourself, that it actually is a positive thing, it starts to give you more confidence in yourself. And, you know, those little confidences start to add up, especially if you come from a place where you don't have a lot of mentors or guidance, and you're kind of like steering your ship on your own because you've got dreams, but you don't really know anyone else who's ever done something like this. So, you know, you really have to listen to yourself. And I think it's just those little things strung together can start to really give you the confidence that you need to have any kind of life you want.
You know, it's funny that moving from Illinois to New York did that to you, because moving to Chicago, and funny enough, working for a grocery store did that for me. I was between radio things, and I was working for the Whole Foods in Lincoln Park in the northern part of downtown. And it was gathering carts in the dead of winter during a blizzard outside, where I was like, I don't know what my life is going to hold, but this is all going to be worth it at some point. Thankfully, I didn't freeze to death in that moment. Thankfully, it, I guess, has worked out, because soon after that, I met my now wife, got a couple of kids, love our lives in Chicago. So it's a great point that you're making there. Sometimes you have to take that leap into the great unknown, even if you are being told to not do it or exercise caution by those who are supposed to be your biggest supporters. And you can't fault your mom. She's just trying to look out for you. But ultimately, she did not know. Only you knew for sure what needed to happen in that moment. And it worked out.
Totally. And I remember another pivotal thing that happened to me even before that is, I remember I was in seventh grade and I was sitting on the bus listening to the radio on my Walkman. And this girl next to me was like, what are you listening to? And I was like, the radio. And she was like, you don't have to listen to the radio, you know? She's like, listen to this. And then she gave me a Smith tape. And I was like, from that point on, I like just followed this other path of like listening to more alternative offerings than what was on the radio. And it really made me think, like, when people don't have musical taste or good taste in music or just like whatever everybody else likes, it's just they didn't have a cool friend to tee them off. Or sometimes it's an older sibling. But like, I just felt really lucky that I was able to have that girl sit next to me and show me the way away from liking Taylor Swift at 40.
Who are you currently jamming to?
You know, I was listening to right this morning. I mean, you're going to laugh, but I was listening to the soundtrack to Nomadland just because I think the piano is so pretty. But, you know, I love all genres of music. I just, you know, whatever's like most popular pop music is usually not what I'm going to be able to get with.
Yeah, I've got more esoteric musical sensibilities too. You and I are close in age, so we were in that 90s era of alternative rock where it got really good and then it got strange to bad in the 2000s, I guess.
Yeah, alternative rock really isn't a thing anymore, I guess. But, you know, I try to get into anything, you know, but I do think that we are at an interesting time in the world where somehow we're in this chokehold where it's like, if you don't like a certain artist, you don't like women. Like, you used to be able to have your own opinion. Like, yeah, you know, Madonna, I get that it's just not for me. You know, and people, you weren't like forced to go live in a cave. So this is just an interesting time from a lot of different perspectives.
Well, I feel like that's why stand-up comedy is not only so important, why we're seeing it enter a sort of golden era with a lot of new people going to the art form is because people crave that. People crave the ability to think critically about issues, but have somebody stand on stage and tell jokes where you're taking a topic and you're trying to poke holes on both sides of that issue to where hopefully at some point everybody meets in the middle, right?
Yeah. And, you know, my degree from college is in theater criticism. So it's like I have been thinking critically my whole life. So, you know, comedy was kind of a natural fit for me. And I still do it, even though it's not popular. And people still love it and listen to it. So, you know, I think it's our job as comedians to say the things that everyone else is afraid to say and to offer viewpoints that maybe aren't the norm. And I'll be doing that all week at Cap City Comedy Club.
That's right. Two shows tonight, two shows tomorrow night. You can go to capcitycomedy.com to snag the tickets that remain. Natasha, thank you so much for the time today. Really enjoyed this conversation. Best of luck with things.
You too. Thanks so much. Great questions.
Thanks to Gentleman Jesus for the intro and outro music. Hear more of his work at gentlemanjesus.com. Thanks to you for hanging out. For more of the show and to connect on social media, visit booksonpod.com. Talk to you next time on Books on Pod.